And Paulie just killed it.
We're back live with more Rami McLaugh on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's me with you until 9 o'clock. We'll talk some Bulls with Will Perdue coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. But talking Bears in the first hour with you. And now going to talk some Bears with the executive producer of the Dan Patrick Show, host of The Tailgate with Paul Pabst, Saturday mornings right here on 670 The Score. He is Paul Pabst. Paul, how are you this evening, my man?
Rami, I'm doing fine. I don't know if you know this, but just last weekend or a weekend and a half ago, I brought my family back to Chicago. We did the Cubs game Friday, Bears game Sunday doubleheader, and It was fantastic.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. Was that? I think I saw a tweet where you said that was the family's first time at Wrigley Field, huh?
Yeah, I had never brought them to Wrigley Field, and that's on me, Big E, for the big PP. They went to Wrigley. We sat in center field bleachers. It was great. The kids soaked me for jerseys at the rally house, and then we had a nice day walking over by. We walked over to DePaul University, got to meet Coach Holtman, got to see the direction of the basketball program at DePaul, which is great. And then Sunday, up early, we hit the tailgate. I got to give my family credit. We were at the tailgate, Soldier Field, South Lot, by 9:07 a.m. That's a veteran maneuver. And we had a great day at the Bears game.
That's a solid weekend in Chicago, Paul Pabst. You nailed it. You did it right. You know, the last time I talked with you, it was between the preseason and the start of the regular season, and the vibes were good. The vibes were good, Paul. We saw Caleb Williams do some things in the preseason, and you said something that day that kind of stuck with me, because it was a thought I hadn't had, and then when you said it, I was like, yeah, me too. You were like, I can't wait for the Bears to get the ball down in the last couple minutes of the game and watch Caleb Williams go to work. We haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen him have to do that yet, Paul. But given what you've seen in the first 5 weeks of the season, how good would you feel if that situation came up this weekend?
You know, I remember our conversation, and I think I said, I think the Bears could be 6-2 after 8 games. And you were like, wow, that's pretty aggressive. I'm like, well, it is. But if you went step by step, let's look at the Titans game. That was an ugly but cool win. I'd rather win an ugly game than lose an ugly game.
Yep.
We against Houston, you know, Caleb Williams did have the ball with a chance to win it with 90 seconds to go, but it was too. I think I said it to you that night. Week two against a very good Houston team is way too early in the season. National TV. The pass rush was unbelievable for Houston. It was a really rough night. Even that said, the defense was so good against Houston that the Bears had the ball with 90 seconds with a chance to win it down 5. You go to the Colts game. You know, the Colts game is the one that bothers me, because that should have been a win. That was ugly. They gave up a couple of running plays, a couple of silly interceptions, some frustrations. And everyone was really down after the Colts game. I was at the Rams game. And in the first half, it was a good first half. It wasn't great. Morale was high. The second half was fantastic. And then last week against Carolina, the team you should rough up, they did exactly what they should do, rough them up. And so where we are here, almost mid-October, above 500, a Jaguars team that's very beatable, and then a bye week, you can't really feel much better, especially if you were down 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I was talking about the schedule coming up earlier in the show, to start the show, actually, Paul, and I think they very well could be 6-3 or 6-2 after these next 4 or 5 games that they got on the schedule here. But it's going to take this offense showing what we saw against Carolina in these next 4 games. Washington has been very good. The other three opponents that they have in these next 4 weeks, all defenses that have given up plenty of points and plenty of yards to start the season, and quite frankly, haven't won a lot of football games. They can make some hay here early in the schedule. And this is exactly what you were talking about when we had that conversation earlier in the season. There's opportunity here.
Yeah, they're facing the 30th ranked defense in Jacksonville. Jacksonville was looking really rough. I mean, they were, you know, people were talking about firing their head coach, so on and so forth. And they squeaked out a win, Jacksonville versus the Colts last week. This is an extremely beatable team. Then you go to a bye week. But I want to go back to the Rams game, because I was at that game. And, you know, the fans were fired up, but they were a little salty from the Colts game. There was a play in the first half. I think it was late in the first half against the Rams. The Bears got the ball about the 1.5-yard line. And you remember that read option, goal
yes,
line, shot that stuff. That was driving people crazy. It drove me crazy. I listen to Mully and Paul all every day. And Mully was about to pull his hair out if he's got any left. about the 1 yard line. So I was sitting in the stands and the Bears get the ball on the 1.5 yard line and they break the huddle and people are screaming, run it, run it. I mean, I'm in the 400 section. I didn't have good seats. I can't lie to you. They're going, run the ball. And Caleb Williams lines up under center and they run the ball with Roschon Johnson right up the middle and scored. It was the best moment of the season for me because they're like, that's it. Don't be creative. Just power it down their throat and get a touchdown. And to me, the rest of that game was really good in the second half versus the Rams. But that running the ball at the goal line, they do that little pulling guard to the right thing, trap play, and they've done it a couple times since with Roschon and Swift. That was the changing point to me. Let's not try to be creative near the goal line. Just get six.
Yeah, and that's not just that play call against Indianapolis, but that series of play calls from first and goal inside the five. It was three runs to Khalil Herbert and then the read option you just referenced to Roschon Johnson. And yep, it's a pet peeve of mine that I have with offensive coordinators across this league. And so Shane Waldron is not the only one guilty of it, but moving the ball backwards in a shotgun, right, or a pistol, or pitching it 6 yards behind the line when you just need to go forward like two or three feet, man. Just take all these big guys you have and just move them forward. So I said that week, progress, that you're just moving forward when you need those, or when you're in those short yardage situations.
I totally agree with you. If you go back to Tom Brady when he was at his peak, he ran fourth and one quarterback sneaks all day.
All the time.
Well, there's, yep, where's a quarterback we don't want to get hit? Who cares? Just run for 1 yard. The guy's 6'5". Yeah, if you go back to last year with the Eagles, they ran that quarterback push quarterback sneak 7 times a game. Creativity is overrated.
Oh, yes. Absolutely overrated, especially in those situations. Talking with Paul Pabst of the Dan Patrick Show and the Tailgate, heard Saturday mornings at 7 right here on The Score. How fun has that defense been to watch as a Bears fan, Paul?
It's been great. I expected the defensive backs to be fantastic. I think it's the best defensive backfield in the entire NFL, four across, almost 5 across. And they don't get enough publicity for it, but the stats are bearing out. Good linebackers. But Gerron Dexter this year, to me, is a standout. You know, the defensive line, we talked about this right before the season started. Montez Sweat is great. They made some trades. Ryan Poles made a couple trades to get some defensive linemen. But Gerron Dexter, who had a nice season last year, I think he's becoming a guy. Like the guy where, yeah, he could be in the Pro Bowl. Maybe not this year. This is the year he gets noticed. Next year is the year he gets the Pro Bowl invite. But he is stepping up. It's only 4 weeks in, but he's pushing people into the backfield. And he's becoming a rush defensive tackle. I'm throwing the name Aaron Donald around and Chris Jones around only because they're the highest end of the experiment at the defensive, right, tackle position. But if you look at what Chris Jones does for the Kansas City Chiefs, I think he's the second most valuable guy in the roster next to Mahomes. I know people love Kelce and Tyreek Hill back in the day, but Chris Jones just roughs people up. And Gerron Dexter is like, I think he's 24. I might be a year up. He is really hitting his stride. And the defensive line, who we talked about in August about being concerned, is becoming a benefit.
You know, Paul, I know as the producer of the Dan Patrick Show, you got your eyes on not just what's going on here in Chicago, but the league as a whole. And there's been, you know, things have been good for Caleb Williams the last couple of weeks, but it's, yeah, a pretty good rookie quarterback out there in the nation's capital. Fair to compare Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels? We'll see him go head-to-head here in a couple of weeks.
It is fair because they're taking 1-2. It's like Greg Oden and Kevin Durant. It's like, yep, you know, LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony, I think, who was taken by the Pistons.
Darko Milicic. Don't forget Darko Milicic.
No offense, but like Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning, when you go 1-2, you're linked forever. You know, Jaden Daniels has played like 60 games of college football. If you go back to ASU, LSU, he runs, he passes. He seems a little more sure of himself, and he was hitting more plays. Now, he's got guys who are veterans on that team, like Terry McLaurin, Brian Robinson, running backs. They have a little more stability. The Bears are a whole new squad. If you look at, you got Keenan Allen, you got Adunze. You know, DJ Moore has been there 1 year. Swift is new. Komet's been there for a few years. But if you look at that offense, if you didn't expect them to take 3 or 4 games to get it together, that's on you. That's not on Caleb Williams. Now, there were some questionable calls. What really, I think, frustrated me and you and all the Bears fans was, you know, offsides and jump starts and false starts and that kind of stuff where you don't even get plays off. And it seems like that's cleaning itself up. Yeah, Jaden Daniels got a nice head start, but September doesn't matter. September is really cute, but it's just a kind of a, it'll be a memory. I'm telling you, when we talk again, let's say we talk again at Thanksgiving, then we judge who the best quarterback is of the rookie class.
Let's do it. I'd love to talk to you again around Thanksgiving. I have to ask you about the big story in the NFL today before I let you go. What do you make of the Robert Saleh firing out there in New York?
It's frustrating because I'm not necessarily a Jets fan, but when you live out here, you see the frustration.
Sure.
I could compare it to, they're a little bit like the Cubs of the NFL, where it just seems like it's more likely to go wrong. Now, the Cubs are on the other side of it now, so I could say that. But you get Aaron Rodgers, you get Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall. You've got some really good defensive players. Everything was set for you to have a good year last year. No, you can't predict the injury. And then this year, slow start. Aaron Rodgers' stats are similar to Zach Wilson's stats last year.
I saw that today. Yeah.
That's an ugly stat. Now, I think the Jets should have been more patient, but the Aaron Rodgers experiment's almost over. He's got this year and at the most next year left on his contract. And I'll bet the owner said, you know what? The coach is expendable. I can't fire Aaron Rodgers. Let's jumpstart these guys and see if we can get in the playoffs this year. Because if you look at the AFC East, Tua is out, which means Miami's done. The Bills are not the Bills of 2 years ago. They're not going to win 14 games. And the Patriots are starting a rookie quarterback. That equals no playoffs. They really have to get past one team. So I kind of like what the Jets did, even if you say Robert Saleh, it was not necessarily his fault.
That's Paul Pabst, executive producer of the Dan Patrick Show, also host of the Tailgate Saturday mornings at 7 right here on The Score. Paul, what can folks expect when they tune into the Tailgate Saturday mornings?
Well, you know, I'm going to talk to Mully. It's the first time I've talked to Mike Mulligan. I've read him for years, and I asked him to come on, and he begrudgingly said, who are you and why do you want me on? So I'm really excited about that. But no, I love him in the morning with Haw. So we're going to have a good time. One bonus coverage point I want to give, because we're a tailgate show. We talk about food. We talk about drinks. Nice. So we were staying over on Diversey and Lincoln, the family. I haven't been to Pat's Pizza on Lincoln in a long time. They used to be up at Belmont years ago. Pat's Pizza, that thin crust, man, I had it twice in one weekend. The calamari appetizer is unreal. Quick shout out for Pat's. If you're anywhere near Lincoln, if you're not near Lincoln and Diversey, go get some Pat's Pizza.
People take it for granted, man. I got a friend out in San Francisco who often laments the lack of good pizza out his way. And I know New York has good pizza and all that, but it's different. It's not Chicago, Paul. So again, you really did that. You did that Chicago weekend, right? Bears game, Cubs game, Pat's Pizza. You did the whole thing, Paulie.
Yeah, I put on 7 pounds. I had 3 Polo sausages at the game day your way tailgate on Sunday morning. You know, right now I'm talking to you from New Haven, Connecticut, which is a hotbed of pizza.
Yeah.
And they do that like kind of not too thin, somewhat thin coal oven pizza. It's really good, and I think it's fantastic. But the thing about Chicago pizza, I think there's a lot more variety. I talk to tourist people and people who aren't from Chicago, and they go, where's the best place to get deep dish when I go back to Chicago, when I visit Chicago? I'm like, well, deep dish is cool, and there's a place for it. There's Pequod's. There's lots of other places.
Yeah.
But I'm like, let's go into a regular bar and ask for a thin crust. And I think you're going to be surprised how much you enjoy thin crust in Chicago, maybe even over the deep dish.
And some people will have that debate, deep dish, thin, both. Paul, you know, both. You don't have to choose deep dish for some occasions, thin crust for others. Why do we have to fight? Why do we have to argue? I'll make something, some kind of competition or debate. Just yes. Do I want thin crust or deep dish? The answer is yes. That's the answer to that question.
I'm telling you, I could get Pequod's at lunch and have Pat's at dinner.
Yeah.
And those are the totally different crusts and be totally fine with it.
Those are completely different meals. We're on the same page about this, Paul. He is the executive producer of the Dan Patrick Show and the host of the Tailgate with Paul Pabst. Catch it Saturday morning at 7, including a discussion with Mully of our very own Mully right here on The Score. Paul, always appreciate the time and the insight, man. Let's talk again soon.
Cool. I'm going to be back in a few weeks. I think I'm going to be back to the Packers game. I have no shot to get tickets, but I'll try to bump some tickets off somebody.
I'm sure somebody's listening right now who could probably help you out. There's Paul.
That was
Pabst.
My plan.
Shameless. And he joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Use the platform, man. Do it. Use the platform and hopefully score some tickets. Somebody help Paulie Pabst out. I'm really surprised. I shouldn't be. I don't know if this happens to you ever, Robbie. People are like, oh, you work at the Score? You work in sports radio? You must get tickets to all the games. You must be able to go see whatever
the
you want.
Whenever. No.
No. The answer is no. But I'm sitting here going, come on, man. You're the executive producer of the Dan Patrick Show. What do you mean you can't get tickets? Or you're sitting in the 400 section at the Bears game. You're Paul Pabst of the Dan Patrick Show. But I'm just doing the same thing to him that people do to us all the time. Where they're like, oh, you must be able to go to any Cubs game you want for free. No, here and there. There are perks, but it's not what people think it is. So I shouldn't jump to that conclusion when it comes to Paul and getting Bears tickets. Somebody help him out. Somebody help Paul Pabst out. Maybe he'll get a shout out on the Dan Patrick Show.
He will definitely be getting those tickets. I mean, like, we have a major reach in this area. He has the whole country to get tickets from. So he has a lot of power. Shout out Paul
Pabst.
Exactly.
He shouldn't even really pay for him, probably. I mean, again, I'm doing it again.
So the funny thing is, I'm actually going to that game. It's the first time I'll ever be in Soldier Field. And that game is at noon. I don't know if it's able to get flexed, but I hope at that time that game does get flexed to the night game, because I think that is worthy enough of being a nighttime game if the Bears continue to do what they do.
And if it gets flexed, easier for Paul to get tickets, because there'll be people who can't make it. Oh, I got to work in the morning. You know what I mean? And then they can sell Paul their tickets. So here's hoping it gets flexed. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, who do we compare the Bears to? Because I can't seem to get a straight answer on this. I'll explain coming up right after this. Robbie Maklouf, Score Evening Show, and back right after this.
We're growing as a football team. That's what I see from the first game till now. We're learning and finding our formula for winning. And I think that's an important thing to do early in the season. And the guys are really starting to gel together. They've always been close, but now they're really communicating well, being attention to detail in the walkthroughs, in practice, and it's showing in the games.
We're back live with more Rami Maklouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
With you till 9. 312-644-6767. If you want to get in on the discussion, you can give me a call. You can shoot me a text. Talking Bears most of the night. We'll break it up with some Bulls talk in the 8 o'clock hour, including a visit from four-time NBA champion Will Perdue. I want to know who's the measuring stick to compare the Bears to. 312-644-6767. And what I mean by that is not necessarily this year, but the grand plan. The grand scheme of things in terms of Ryan Poles' whole grand plan, to be repetitive. Because it's in year three of this rebuild, and up until this week's win against Carolina, in which there's very little, if anything, to complain about. But up until then, my stance was, I know it wasn't supposed to be great yet. I know this wasn't a finished product coming into the season, but I expected it to look better by year three, week four of Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus's tenure. I just expected it to be better. And quite frankly, until, as I talked about earlier in the show, they show that they can repeat that type of performance. When there's a bad team in front of them, you just do what you're supposed to do and pummel them into the ground and walk away with a two or a three score win. I'm still going to wonder if it is where it should be. But every time I bring up a team or a situation and go, well, how come they can do it? I always get the, well, you can't compare it to that. Well, the Bears aren't. That's different. You can't compare it to that. So who can I compare or measure the Bears franchise against and this current version of the Chicago Bears that Ryan Poles has put together, that we sit in year three of a rebuild? Because I can't seem to nail one down where people go, oh yeah, no, that's a fair comparison. And I always start right in the division. Just naturally, I start right in the division. And you can give me a call, shoot me a text, 312-644-6767. Because those are the teams you're going to compete against. You're going to play them six times a year. If you're ever going to be a Super Bowl hopeful or a serious Super Bowl contender, you're going to have to be, theoretically, the best team in your division. Right? That's got to happen at some point along the way. And right now, you got to say the Bears are at the back end of the NFC North. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And I look around the North, and I see the Detroit Lions, who in most people's eyes, well, maybe the Vikings are changing that, but probably not after just 5 weeks, and given the Vikings' propensity to choke and fumble things away over the course of their history. But let's start at the top, what I think is the top with the Lions. Last year was year three of their rebuild, and they were in the NFC Championship. And they had a very complete unit on offense, a very complete unit on defense, a head coach that, you know, you kind of believed in and you sort of knew was the dude for that team and that city. And people go, well, you can't compare it to the Lions. Okay, well then I won't even try to compare it to the Packers and the Vikings, because they never needed a rebuild. There was never any huge downturn or dip or valley for the Packers and Vikings as organizations, at least not in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years. They didn't need a rebuild, despite losing MVP caliber quarterbacks and having young revamped rosters. The Packers lost Aaron Rodgers and went right back to the playoffs and were the youngest roster to ever do so the next year with Jordan Love. And by the end of the year, Jordan Love playing at an MVP level. The Vikings let Kirk Cousins walk, drafted J.J. McCarthy in the first round. He gets hurt. Kevin O'Connell is somehow winning with Sam Darnold, a quarterback off the scrap heap. And their offense has looked a lot more functional than the Bears through 5 weeks. Can I compare it to that? Can I compare the Bears to anybody in the division, or is that not fair? Okay, I'll find another category of teams that maybe we can measure this Bears team against, this whole plan. How about, I don't know, coaches hired in the same year as Matt Eberflus? Is that fair? Can we do that? Now, that's not entirely one-sided, the way that the division is. If you were to compare, the other three coaches hired in the same year as Matt Eberflus were Mike McDaniel, Kevin O'Connell, and Brian Daboll. And for the record, and this isn't hindsight being 2020, those were the three guys at the top of my list when the Bears were shopping for a head coach. I just wanted an offensive-minded guy. Those were the hot names among offensive-minded guys. They didn't go with them. And I think most people listening to me right now would say that two of those teams are more established than the Bears. The Dolphins lost two of this year, so that changes their landscape a little bit. But prior to the Tua injury, I would take where the Dolphins were over the Bears, and I would take Mike McDaniel over Matt Eberflus. I would take where the Vikings are over the Bears, and I would take Kevin O'Connell over Matt Eberflus. I don't think it's too early to say those two things. And when it comes to Brian Daboll, he's been stuck with Daniel Jones as his quarterback. I don't think we can entirely measure or judge Brian Daboll as a head coach and an offensive mind when they're giving out huge quarterback contracts to the likes of Daniel Jones. But, I mean, no excuses. To this point, I guess you'd say the Bears are in a better place than the Giants are. And, yeah, you'd probably take Matt Eberflus over Brian Daboll. Is that fair to compare? Is that a good? Can we take teams with coaches hired the same year as Matt Eberflus? Can we use them as a measuring stick to compare the Bears to? No? Okay. How about GMs hired, teams with GMs hired the same year as Ryan Poles? Can we do that? Again, not entirely one-sided. As a matter of fact, Ryan Poles is doing better than most of these guys. So if you're the Bears, this is probably the category that you want to pick to measure yourself against, to compare yourself to in terms of some kind of measuring stick and seeing if this Bears rebuild is on track. The guys hired that offseason, when the same year Ryan Poles was, it was the same year that Matt Eberflus was, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah from Minnesota. Again, I'll take Minnesota right now over where we're at. Omar Khan of Pittsburgh, Greg Penner of Denver, and Joe Schoen of the New York Giants. He looks pretty good, and the Bears look pretty good compared to those general managers and those organizations and where they're at right now. Can we use them as a measuring stick, as a comparison to see if this thing is on track? Or how about first-year offensive coordinators? But I didn't think it was fair to just look at first-year offensive coordinators because it's a very unique situation to be your first year as the offensive coordinator and play caller and with a rookie quarterback, as Shane Waldron is right now. And there's only one of those. There's only one of those in the league right now, one pairing in the league right now of an offensive coordinator and a rookie quarterback, and it's happening in Washington. Now, I just asked Paul Pabst of the Dan Patrick Show, and catch him Saturday mornings on the tailgate at 7 o'clock right here on The Score. I asked him if it's fair to compare those two guys, and he said, yeah, it is. And I thought it was a really good comparison when he said, this is Greg Oden and Kevin Durant. This is LeBron and Carmelo and Darko Milicic. How about me pulling out the Darko Milicic? He couldn't think of the name, and me just, boom.
I'll never forget Darko Milicic. Hey, he has more rings than Carmelo, though. That's all I can
that
say.
That is true. That is true. But looking at that pairing and asking you the question, who's a measuring stick for this Bears team and this rebuild to see if they are where they should be right now, there's only one other pairing of a quarterback and a first-year OC, and that's in Washington with Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels. And I know, again, I'll say the same thing about this as I will about the Bears as a whole. When we talk about Shane Waldron, Caleb Williams, the offense, I know this isn't the final verdict. This isn't the finished product. I'm not saying that Shane Waldron and Jaden Daniels, that Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels are a better combo or duo, or he's going to be a better quarterback than Caleb Williams. Just that through five games, if you want to keep telling me, well, patience, you got to have patience. Why don't they have to have patience in Washington? That offense looks like a well-oiled machine. And they didn't add all the talent this offseason. They made some shrewd moves on the offensive side of the football, but they didn't add all the talent to the offensive side of the football that the Bears did this offseason. And right now, Jaden Daniels has more yards, far better completion percentage, better touchdown interception ratio, more rushing yards. Now, this grain of salt has to be thrown in there. He hasn't really played anybody when it comes to Jaden Daniels and that Washington offense. They faced the Browns, Cardinals, Cincy, the Giants, and Tampa. But he's gone for over 200 yards in every game but one. He's scored a touchdown in every game. Well, every game, not every game but one. He's scored a touchdown in every game. And just as a whole, that offense looks like it's humming along, like it's a lot more functional and competent than what Shane Waldron is putting out there with the rookie quarterback in Caleb Williams. So are any of those fair comparisons or measuring sticks for the Chicago Bears? Because quite frankly, as you go down that list, whether we're comparing them to the rest of the teams in the division, other teams that hired a head coach in the same year, other teams that hired a new GM in the same year, the other team with a first-year offensive coordinator who's got a rookie quarterback, or whether we're just comparing those two quarterbacks and their respective situations, I always get pushback when I say, well, how come they're doing that? And we're doing this. I always get, well, you can't compare that to that. Why? And who can I compare them to? So I know if I should be satisfied or disappointed with what I'm seeing out there on a week-to-week basis and where this rebuild is in year three heading into week six. Because that's what I'm looking at. Not just the standings today or whatever, the schedule coming up in the next few weeks. That's all stuff we can, and I have already tonight talked about. But big picture, to look at this thing and go, is this where it should be? Are we on track? Are they ahead of schedule? Are they behind schedule? Should I be happy? Should I be disappointed? who is the team we can compare the Bears to? Who's the measuring stick as far as another organization in the NFL? Who are you looking at and wondering, why are they doing that and we're doing this? 312-644-6767. I will take some of your calls. I will read some of your texts. I am Rami Makhlouf. It's the Score Evening Show, and I'll be back right after this.
The human side of it is, you know, you want your guy just to take off and roll, but everyone's journey is going to be different. I think the important thing is for Caleb to understand that as well and run his own race. And he's done that well in terms of just focusing on how can I get better? How can I put our team in a position to win games?
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's Bears GM Ryan Poles talking about comparing Jaden Daniels to Caleb Williams, rookie QB, with a first-year offensive coordinator. I'm asking, who do we compare this thing to? Not just on a week-to-week basis. Where this Bears organization is at in heading into week six of year three of Ryan Poles' grand plan? Who can I measure them against and try and figure out if they are where they are supposed to be or behind schedule or ahead of schedule? 312-644-6767. Quick update from the world of baseball. The Mets just finished off the Phillies. A Francisco Lindor grand slam in the sixth inning. The difference in a 4-1 win. That sends the Mets to the NLCS. The Phillies, with the best record in baseball, are now headed home. Earlier today, Robbie's Tigers knocked off the Guardians to take a 2-1 series lead. One more, and they're headed to the ALCS. One game live right now. Yankees and Royals tied at 2. Dodgers and Padres go at it later tonight. Padres lead that series 2-1. You got to be feeling pretty good about your baseball team up there in Detroit, Robbie.
It is pretty amazing. We got two teams of destiny in the MLB playoffs right now. We have the Mets and we have the Tigers. Funny thing, the Tigers, fun fact, there are zero free agents on the current Tigers roster right now because Javi isn't on the roster and Maeda wasn't put on the roster as well. So right now, our payroll is about $18 million. And then I look at the Chicago Cubs. I'm like, how did you not make the playoffs?
You didn't have to, rub that salt in that wound. That was unnecessary, Robbie.
You look at the Cubs lineup, top to bottom, it is so much better than the Tigers, and somehow we're about to go to the ALCS. I can't believe this is my life.
They're fun, though. They're a fun team to watch, and these playoffs have been outstanding, man. There's something about, and your team is in it, Robbie, but there's something about watching playoff baseball with nothing invested. Like, I'd want my team to be there, but there's really something so enjoyable about watching playoff baseball with no dog in the fight whatsoever, because you can just react to everything's just cool. Like, every big play that happens, you're like, wow, that was awesome. There's no bad play. There's nothing that's going to make me put my head in my hands. You know what? I love playoff baseball with no dog in the fight. It's very, very fun.
100%. These playoffs have been incredible, but in the city of Detroit, just to make it about me, because that's what I always do when I talk about my team, they've just, like, this city has been dead when it comes to baseball for the past 10 years. And when I compare Detroit to Chicago in terms of love of baseball, here in Chicago, they love baseball just so much, and it made me miss the last 10 years because as soon as Al Avila took over and as soon as Brad Ausmus became the manager, everything went to crap, and then no one cared about baseball, and to see the city alive again is awesome, but it also makes me want Chicago to be good at baseball again because if the Cubs make another run or if the White Sox get good, oh my God, it would be just incredible to see that, and I'm sad I haven't seen that while I've been in Chicago so far.
I think the Cubs are close. I think the Cubs are close to doing something there, but it has been very, very fun, and I'm happy for you, and this is a fun little detour, but let's get back to the Bears talk. Who do I measure this team against? Who do I compare this organization to? 312-644-6767. Before we talk with Will Perdue about your Bulls coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, this from the 217, the Bears made the biggest overhaul on offense. There is no comparison. Your comparison is how did good quarterbacks in the past progress as rookies to Caleb? This is honestly a unique situation. I don't accept that. I don't accept that there is no comparison. This isn't that unique or wasn't that bad a situation when Ryan Poles took it over that you can't compare it or measure it against anything. I don't accept that. I appreciate the text and you make some good points. But I don't accept that. And when you say the Bears made the biggest overhaul on offense, there is no comparison. Well, if anything, there is no comparison in that Caleb Williams, in a lot of people's eyes, with that overhaul on offense and with what the defense did going into the back half of last year and finishing the season with 7 wins and having the number one pick in the draft, a lot of people said it's the best situation a quarterback has ever stepped into. So if you're saying it's a unique situation and you can't compare in that direction, that it's so good you can't compare, well, then they're definitely not where this thing should be. You should definitely be running at a higher level than what Washington is doing right now. Here's a text from the 217. Washington sucked last year. They got a new coach and new QB, and they are looking better than us when he was in the, quote, as I just referenced, best situation a number one has ever stepped into. Again, I know it's not a finished product. I know the race isn't over yet between the number one pick and the number two pick and Caleb Williams and Jayden Daniels. I understand that. But who can I compare it to, if not that? And another one, then I'll get to some calls. Poles has done a pretty good job considering the cap situation Pace left him with. It was all caps bleak. You don't think it was bleak in Detroit? When they overhauled that thing,
incredibly bleak.
Yeah, Robbie, was that bleak? Was that bleak in Detroit when they brought in Dan Campbell and the name of the GM is escaping me now. Who hired Dan Campbell? Help me out, Robbie.
Brad Holmes.
Thank you.
Yeah, when we had Matt Patricia, I seriously hated the sport of football. So yeah, life was very bleak.
Things were pretty bleak. So we. If you're saying it was bleak, there are other bleak situations. They've gotten where they're trying to go faster than the Bears are. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Let's go to the phones. Will, you're on the score. What you got on this Bears rebuild? This Bears rebuild. Will, easy for me to say.
No, I think the main disappointment I got in it is I thought for sure that I'm old school, and I think you're supposed to build a team from the inside out with the lines on both sides. And I thought Poles would do that a lot sooner than he has because it's still not right on the offensive side of it. But other than that, as far as, like you said, comparing with the coaches that was hired at the same time, I really thought that Flus was coming in to be football's version of Ricky Renteria in this town, to just – hold it, get us through, getting rid of the cap space and all of that. And by the time we got into the position that we're in now with a number one pick quarterback, I thought the line would be better, and I thought we would have had a coach that would be suitable to take us to the next level. As they always say, when you go from, you know, Doug Collins to Phil Jackson, when you go from Ricky Renteria to whichever side of town gets rid of him, but I really just the only disappointment I have in him is really the lineman. I thought he would, as a former lineman, know what to look for in him. And I think the main shortage he has on that is he is such a freaking nice guy. And he goes out and he gets guys that are nice and have good morals and things like that. When it comes to those lines, you got to have guys that you have to like keep in a cage up until Saturday night at 7 or something.
Yeah, you got to have at least one or two of them. You got to have at least one or two of them on that offensive line who bring that sort of that nasty up there.
So, but that's my main disappointment. Well, I think he's taken risk on high-rated college players that failed in the pros, thinking he could get one more shot out of them or whatever. But I think that his good moves as far as the trade went, and the picks that he's made on defense and things of that, I think they've outweighed the risk that he's taken on the linemen from the Raiders or Claypool or anybody like that, because it really didn't cost us any damage like the risk that Carolina took on getting that number one pick is probably going to make a 5 to 8 year impact on their whole squad now. So,
Will, I appreciate the call, man. And you make great points, and I say you make great points because – we're kind of on the same page on a couple of those points that you make. So I'm patting myself on the back as much as I'm patting you on the back when I say some solid points there. I do think by year three, it's fair to expect a better offensive line, than especially when so much of this plan is centered around the quarterback that you took with pick one in round one. You can't send that offensive line out there in front of that guy. You can't. especially not, it was okay last week, but that was against the worst pass rush in the league, or one of the worst pass rushes in the league. Like, that's, you failed on that front to protect the number one pick in the draft adequately by sending that offensive line out there. And not by lack of trying. Ryan Poles and the Bears have put resources into the offensive line when you look at the Nate Davis signing, draft picks that they've used. Maybe not enough resources at the center position. But they tried to build a good offensive line, and it just hasn't worked to this point. Still a work in progress. I just think it should be better than what we've seen till now. And the head coach. I thought the same thing about Matt Eberflus, that he was a Ricky Renteria, like bridge guy to get us to the actual guy. But it looks like at least for 1 year, they're going to give him a shot with what they think should be a team that can win football games. I think by year three, we should know about our head coach. In Miami, they know about Mike McDaniel, who was hired the same year as Matt Eberflus. In Minnesota, they damn well know about Kevin O'Connell, who's somehow winning games with Sam Darnold. Not just winning games, looking good. They're number one in every power ranking that I see with Sam Darnold at quarterback. How'd they do that? Can I compare? Is it fair? 312-644-6767. I'll continue to take your Bears thoughts right up until we talk some Bulls with Will Perdue. He'll join me at 8:15. More of your thoughts right after this at 312-644-6767. It's Rami Makhlouf with you on the Score Evening Show.